So, as of early 2026, there are 120 people who have each signed contracts, right? Paying upwards of like $1 million to open this highly promoted celebrity-backed longevity clinic.
Yeah.
But the catch is, and this is wild, not a single one of those clinics actually exists yet.
Zero, not one.
Right. So, welcome to a brand new deep dive. Today, we're basically opening the financial black box of the Ultimate Longevity Center franchise, or ULC.
Yeah, we're really digging into it today.
Exactly. We're putting on the hats of, skeptical institutional capital advisors. That means we're ignoring all the glossy influencer marketing. We're looking strictly at the primary source documents, the federal dockets, the regulatory filings, and the actual raw unit economics.
Because, I mean, to really evaluate an investment of this massive size, you've got to dissect the machinery behind the marketing. Yeah.
Right.
So we're looking at a huge stack of franchise disclosure documents, FTC press releases, SEC filings, and even some independent university analyses. The goal here is to just look at the actual math and the regulatory reality of opening a concierge longevity clinic today.
Yeah, it's like I think of it like looking at a luxury sports car,
Right?
The paint job looks incredible on Instagram, but before you write a $1 million check, we need to put it on a lift and see if there's actually an engine under the hood.
That's a perfect way to put it.
So, if I'm an investor looking at the marketing materials for ULC, the first thing shoved in my face is the leadership team.
Oh, absolutely. The dream team.
Right. They sell this as a proven model built by this seasoned operational genius backed by massive celebrities. So, who exactly is building the foundation of this franchise?
Well, the operational architect is a guy named Anthony Geisler. He launched Sequel Brands, which is the parent company of this new franchise.
Right.
And to be fair, he does have a massive track record in boutique fitness. Like, he built Club Pilates, Cycle Bar, and he even took Xponential Fitness public on the New York Stock Exchange.
Oh, wow. So that's legit.
It is. It's a genuinely impressive operational resume. But the federal paper trail paints a highly, highly complicated picture of exactly how that scale was achieved.
Uh-oh. What kind of paper trail?
Well, in March 2026, the Federal Trade Commission levied a $17 million settlement against Xponential.
Wait, what? A $17 million settlement from the FTC?
Yep. And that remains the largest consumer redress in FTC franchise enforcement history.
I mean, that doesn't just happen over some minor administrative typo, right? What were they actually investigating to get to 17 million?
So the FTC's own press release stated that the company, under his leadership, quote, failed to disclose that Geisler had been repeatedly sued for fraud. That is a direct quote from the federal agency.
Oh man, that's heavy.
Yeah, and it doesn't stop there. Beyond the FTC action, a group of five franchisees filed a class action lawsuit, which resulted in another $22.75 million settlement.
So wait, under his tenure, you're looking at basically $39.75 million in settlements.
Exactly. Almost $40 million.
That is just an astronomical amount of baggage for a founder who's out there launching a brand new franchise. Like, how does a company's board even react to that level of federal scrutiny?
Well, Geisler was actually removed as CEO by his own board in May 2024. And this happened, a federal criminal probe by the Department of Justice.
A criminal probe. Wait, really?
Yeah. Now, we have to be very precise with the legal distinctions here, okay?
Of course.
Xponential settled those cases without admitting liability. And furthermore, the SEC had a completely separate investigation into the company, which they actually closed with no enforcement action.
Okay, fair enough.
However, as of the latest reporting in our sources, that DOJ criminal probe remained ongoing. And then he launched Sequel Brands just about 7 months after his removal.
Wow. Okay, so I'm looking at the promotional materials right now, and the other really big name attached to this is Tony Robbins.
Right.
Like, the franchise is powered by this longevity company called LifeForce, and Robbins is heavily featured everywhere as the face of consumer trust.
Exactly.
So if the operational founder has this much recent regulatory heat, did Tony Robbins like personally vet this setup?
There is absolutely zero evidence in the public record that Tony Robbins personally vetted the regulatory history of the ULC founders.
None.
None. Robbins is a co-founder and a public spokesperson for LifeForce, sure, but he is not the CEO. The actual CEO is a guy named Dougal Bain Kim, and the board is chaired by a venture capitalist.
Okay, so Robbins is just kind of the face.
Yeah, and Robbins himself has publicly stated he is involved in over 140 different businesses.
Wow. So the marketing completely relies on the halo effect. It's basically like buying a luxury condo because a world-famous architect posted a rendering of it on their social media, right? But you don't realize that the general contractor pouring the actual concrete was just fined millions of dollars by the government for hiding structural cracks in their last 20 buildings.
That is exactly the mechanical reality of the corporate structure here. The celebrity brings the leads, you know, they get people interested, but they aren't managing the day-to-day operations.
Right.
And because the operational foundation has this really severe FTC history, traditional institutional franchise buyers might just run away.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
So to keep selling licenses, the franchise relies incredibly heavily on a shiny scientific face and this network of shadow salespeople.
Okay, let's talk about that scientific face then. Because if you spend like any time on wellness social media, you see Gary Brecka everywhere.
Oh yeah, everywhere.
Right? Doing cold plunges, going on massive podcasts, claiming he can predict mortality from a single blood test.
Yeah.
And he uses the title human biologist, which, you know, sounds incredibly authoritative.
Sure it does.
So what do the primary sources actually say about his medical credentials?
Well, the title human biologist is completely unregulated in the United States.
Really? Completely unregulated?
Yep. Anyone can just put it in their bio. According to his actual background, he holds bachelor's degrees in biology, but he has absolutely no medical degree and no clinical license to practice medicine.
Wow. So what was he doing before all the wellness influencing?
His background prior to this was actually in the life insurance industry. Specifically, he acted as the CEO of an actuarial company.
Wait, life insurance? So when he talks about predicting when someone will die, he's not doing that from the perspective of a doctor treating a patient?
Nope, not all.
He's doing it from the perspective of an insurance company pricing out risk, like trying to figure out how much to charge for a premium.
That is exactly the origin of the methodology. And when it comes to the specific public health claims he makes online, McGill University's Office for Science and Society did an independent analysis.
And what did they find?
They found absolutely no peer-reviewed science supporting his public health claims.
Seriously, none?
None. And beyond the lack of credentials, there's also a highly significant litigation history. Cardone Ventures and 10X Health Ventures filed a $100 million federal fraud lawsuit against him.
$100 million? That is massive. What were they alleging?
They alleged that he built competing businesses using his employer's assets and breached non-compete agreements.
Okay, so how did that federal fraud lawsuit resolve?
Well, it was voluntarily dismissed by joint agreement before it ever went to trial. Both sides just walked away.
Right, so they settled it out of court, basically.
Yeah. But we need to be clear, that is emphatically not an exoneration or a legal ruling on the merits of the case. It literally just means they stopped fighting in court.
Gotcha.
But the public court record still contains a resignation letter from his own chief financial officer. And that letter explicitly cited efforts to build corporate structures designed to circumvent non-compete agreements.
Man. So I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of a buyer here, right? If the operational founder has a historic FTC settlement, and the scientific face of the brand has zero medical licenses, and this recent massive fraud litigation, how on earth have they successfully sold 120 of these franchise licenses?
That is the million-dollar question.
Like, someone has to be doing the convincing, right?
Absolutely. And this is where we have to look at the hidden mechanics of the franchise broker network. See, the franchise industry has this entire layer of unregulated middlemen called franchise consultants or brokers.
Okay, how do they fit in?
For example, there's a podcast called The Franchise Insiders, and they heavily promote ULC to their audience, calling it a, quote, once-in-a-generation shift in wellness.
Oh, wow. Once-in-a-generation.
Right. And what they present to the buyer is basically a free matchmaking service. They act like this objective advisor who just wants to help you find the perfect business.
But I'm guessing they aren't actually working for free. What's the hidden financial mechanism there?
Sequel Brands pays these brokers a commission of $26,000 to $32,500 for every single placement.
Wait, let me stop you right there. $32,000.
Yep.
So a broker positions themselves as an objective advisor, telling a buyer, you know, they really want to help them succeed, while secretly pocketing over $30,000 the second the buyer signs the paperwork.
Exactly. Their financial interest is fully realized the moment the ink dries on your contract. They are entirely insulated from whether your clinic succeeds or goes bankrupt 2 years down the line.
That's like taking objective financial advice from a car salesman whose kid's college fund depends on you buying the extended warranty today.
It's incredibly conflicted, and they push this as a proven model. But as an institutional advisor, the very first thing you check is the franchise disclosure document, specifically item 19.
Right. So for those who haven't really waded into franchise law, what exactly is an item 19?
So a franchise disclosure document, or FDD, is a legally required document that franchisors must give to buyers. And item 19 is the specific, highly regulated section where a franchisor is actually allowed to make financial performance representations.
Meaning that's where they show you the actual revenue of operating clinics.
Exactly. That's the proof. But if you look at the ULC FDD, the item 19 openly admits there is no financial data to share.
Because there are no clinics open.
Exactly. Because there are exactly zero locations open.
So these brokers are earning $32,000 to sell a proven model that legally admits it has no financial proof. That alone is just wild.
It really is.
But, okay, let's take a step back. Let's pretend for a second that the founders had zero regulatory baggage, right?
Sure, hypothetical.
Let's pretend Gary Brecko was a fully licensed medical doctor and the brokers worked completely for free.
Mm-hmm.
If we strip all that emotional marketing away and look strictly at the math of running a concierge longevity clinic, what does the cash flow actually look like?
Well, the marketing materials suggest the initial investment is somewhere between $500,000 and $1.2 million.
Okay, that's a big chunk of change.
It is, but that capital really just gets the doors open and the equipment installed. The real trap that nobody talks about is the burn rate.
The burn rate. Okay, break that down.
To survive the 12 to 36 months it takes to actually reach profitability, a concierge clinic in this space burns about $40,000 to $50,000 a month on marketing and customer acquisition costs.
$50,000 a month just to get people in the door. Why is the customer acquisition cost, the CAC, so incredibly high?
Because the market is saturated. You can't just run some targeted local ads for $5,000 a month anymore. It doesn't work.
Right. You need more than Facebook ads.
Exactly. You have to run high-end paid media, sponsor local luxury events, and retain full-time community managers. So if you are burning $50,000 a month for 2 years before you break even, the actual working capital requirement you need is closer to $1.5 to $2 million.
So that initial million-dollar investment they quote you is basically just the VIP cover charge to get inside the building.
Yeah, pretty much.
But once you're in, you realize you have to pay $50,000 every single month just to keep your table from being given to someone else while you desperately try to build a membership base.
That is a brilliant analogy. Yes.
So what happens if a franchisee doesn't have that extra million in reserve?
Well, they either take on massive high-interest debt or they just close their doors entirely. And honestly, this high customer acquisition cost is heavily compounded by behavioral economics that nobody ever warns you about.
What kind of behavioral economics?
I'm talking about gender retention dynamics.
Yeah.
The addressable market in longevity isn't just one uniform pool of people, you know.
Mm.
It is completely split by deep psychological and behavioral differences.
Okay, so how does that actually play out in the unit economics of a local clinic, like on the ground?
Well, take female customers in the wellness space. They're highly trend aware and generally much more proactive about preventative health, right? So they're much easier to acquire initially. But they're also highly price sensitive and modality driven. Meaning, if a new clinic opens down the street offering a trendier red light therapy bed or like a cheaper IV drip, they will jump ship.
So they churn faster.
Exactly. This results in a much shorter lifetime value, or LTV. You constantly have to spend money to replace them.
Okay, and what about the male demographic? Because I imagine guys are entirely different.
Completely different. Male customers have the exact opposite problem. Once they buy in, they tend to be highly loyal, right? Giving them a very long lifetime value.
That sounds great for the business.
It is, once they're in. But the upfront friction is massive. There's deep-seated stubbornness, stigma, and just general embarrassment associated with admitting you need testosterone replacement or medical weight loss help.
Oh, I see. So getting them to admit they need help is the expensive part.
Right. Overcoming that psychological friction means the marketing dollars required to get a male customer to just walk through the door for the first time is exponentially higher.
Man. So as a franchise, you really aren't just running one business.
Yeah.
You have to build and fund two completely different, highly expensive acquisition funnels, one to constantly replace the high-churn female demographic, and one to break through the massive psychological walls of the male demographic.
You nailed it. That's exactly the operational reality.
So how does a clinic generate enough cash to fuel that kind of insane monthly burn rate?
You need a massive engine of high-margin recurring revenue. And for the vast majority of longevity clinics over the last 3 years, that engine has primarily been compounded GLP-1 weight loss treatments.
Okay, so the active ingredients in drugs like Ozempic and Wegovy.
Exactly.
But that exact revenue engine is currently under assault, right? Like from massive market forces.
Yes, from two uncontrollable forces. The first one is just rapid commoditization.
Break down the commoditization for me, because these GLP-1s have historically been the ultimate cash cow for these boutique clinics.
Oh, they definitely were. Just 18 months ago, a boutique clinic could easily charge $600 to $700 a month for a compounded GLP-1 protocol. The margins were spectacular.
And today?
Today, you have massive national telehealth platforms charging $99 a month for the exact same active pharmaceutical ingredient, and they ship it directly to the patient's house.
Wait, $99?
Yes.
How does a local franchisee with a massive retail lease and a $50,000 monthly marketing budget even begin to compete with an app charging $99?
They literally can't compete on price. It's impossible. So they are forced to try and justify a 700% markup purely based on the quote-unquote in-person concierge experience.
But for a drug you inject at home, consumers are quickly realizing they really don't need a luxury waiting room.
Exactly. If your entire franchise investment thesis assumed you were going to net $800 a month from hundreds of local GLP-1 members, that financial model is already obsolete.
Wow. And even if they somehow figure out a way to survive the telehealth price war, they are still facing a much bigger enemy, right?
Oh, much bigger. We have to look at the asymmetric regulatory war being waged by Big Pharma.
Right. So, for context, can you just briefly explain the difference between what Big Pharma sells and what these compounding clinics sell?
Sure. So Big Pharma holds the actual patents on the branded FDA-approved GLP-1 pens. But because there have been massive national shortages of these branded drugs, the FDA legally permits specialized compounding pharmacies to mix the raw active ingredients and sell them to clinics.
Okay, so it's sort of like a copyright battle over a recipe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Big Pharma owns the official cookbook, but because they physically can't print enough books to meet demand, compounding pharmacies are legally allowed to bake a slightly modified version of the cake.
But Big Pharma doesn't want anyone else baking that cake, so they are trying to change the rules of the kitchen.
Yeah, exactly. The pharmaceutical giants are running sustained, multi-million dollar media and lobbying campaigns, essentially painting compounded peptides as unregulated, unsafe, and dangerous.
To protect their market share.
Yes. Their ultimate goal is to pressure regulators to shut down compounding entirely, which would instantly force everyone back to their highly expensive branded patents.
But if we look purely at the public, impartial facts here, aren't the branded drugs carrying pretty serious risks themselves?
Absolutely. If you read the FDA-approved labels of Big Pharma's own GLP-1 medications, they carry documented post-market surveillance side effects.
Like what?
The labels explicitly warn of severe gastrointestinal events, suicidal ideation, and even death.
Wow. Okay, so Big Pharma is legally permitted to sell a mass-manufactured drug that literally lists suicidal ideation and death as potential side effects on the box. Yet they are weaponizing their massive lobbying power to claim the local pharmacist who's mixing the exact same base ingredient is the real danger to public health. I mean, it just seems like a pure market share protection strategy disguised as a safety campaign.
It is entirely a structural reality of how pharmaceutical regulations work in this country. And the danger here is that if the FDA caves to that lobbying and tightens the rules on compounding,
what happens?
Well, the massive telehealth companies might have the capital to pivot or absorb the legal costs. But the local Ultimate Longevity Center franchisee, who is sitting on a 10-year lease with 200 members relying on compounded margins just to pay the rent, they will be completely wiped out.
Brutal. All right, so we've basically mapped out the entire board here.
We really have.
We've looked at the founders' FTC histories, the unregulated broker commissions, the crushing customer acquisition costs, and the regulatory war threatening their main product. So let's synthesize this by directly answering the core questions an investor is actively typing into Google right now while sitting on the fence.
Let's do it.
First query, is the Ultimate Longevity Center a scam?
Well, Objectively speaking, it is a legally registered franchise entity. It really is up to the individual investor to decide what label to apply to it.
Right.
However, the public record is incredibly clear. There are zero locations open. The operational founder is connected to $39.75 million in past FTC and franchise settlements.
Right.
The scientific face has recent multi-million dollar fraud litigation and absolutely no clinical medical licenses. And the legal FDD document contains zero financial earnings data to support the broker's claims of a proven model.
Man. Okay, let's play devil's advocate for a second. Why should someone buy it? What is the bull case here?
The legitimate case for buying is that Anthony Geisler genuinely does know how to scale franchise systems. I mean, Club Pilates is a massive, undeniable success.
That's true.
The broader longevity and preventative health market is genuinely booming, and Tony Robbins provides an instant marketing halo that attracts initial consumers. So if an investor has $2 million in fully liquid capital, isn't afraid of high risk, and has the patience to absorb monthly losses for 3 years to establish a local monopoly, they might actually be getting in on the ground floor of a massive trend.
All right. And on the flip side, why should an investor not buy it? Let's look at the actual extraction of fees from the franchisee.
Yeah, the fee structure is incredibly aggressive. The franchisor takes an 8% royalty plus a 2% brand fund fee plus mandatory technology fees.
Wait, so?
You are giving up more than 10% of your gross revenue right off the top before you even pay your staff, buy your peptides, or pay your local rent.
10% off gross. How does that compare to other operating franchises in the same wellness space?
Oh, it's night and day. Look at a competitor like VIO MedSpa. They only charge a 6% royalty. And crucially, their FDD actually discloses a median revenue of $1.18 million.
Because they have real locations operating.
That's exactly. Relive Health is another one. They charge a 5% royalty. Furthermore, because ULC has zero operating history, standard SBA or Small Business Administration, financing is completely unavailable to buyers.
That is a massive red flag for the capital structure. Because if you can't get an SBA loan, you have to fund that million-dollar build-out with pure cash or incredibly expensive alternative financing.
Right.
So if I can buy into Relive Health or VIO MedSpa, pay nearly half the royalty rate, utilize favorable SBA loans, and actually call up operating franchisees to verify their real revenue, why on earth would I pay a 10% gross royalty for a brand that hasn't proven it can successfully operate a single clinic?
And that is the ultimate question the math demands you ask. The whole purpose of analyzing these primary source documents, the court dockets, the FDDs, the FTC actions, is to illuminate the structural risks that the commission brokers are financially incentivized to ignore. When you buy a franchise, you are supposed to be buying a proven de-risk system. If there is no data, you are basically personally funding the experiment to see if the system even works.
Yeah, you're paying them $1 million to let you test their idea.
Well, we put this investment on the lift today, and we definitely found some major foundational cracks under the hood.
Absolutely.
You now have the actual unit economics and the hidden agendas of the people selling the dream. But before we wrap up, there's one final larger implication for this entire industry that we need to touch on.
Yeah, we discussed Big Pharma's aggressive regulatory war to shut down compounded GLP-1s, right?
Right.
Well, consider this chilling scenario. If the pharmaceutical giants actually successfully use their lobbying power to crush the compounding pharmacies, what happens next?
Okay.
What if those same massive corporations decide to franchise their own concierge longevity clinics?
Oh, wow. I mean, they already manufacture the branded drug.
Exactly. If they open their own clinics, they instantly control the entire supply chain from the laboratory straight to the waiting room. That's terrifying.
That vertical integration could completely wipe out every boutique franchise operator who just paid $1 million for a license to compete against them.
So if you are signing a 10-year commercial lease and a decade-long franchise agreement today, you are basically betting your life savings that Big Pharma will just politely let you keep taking their market share.
That is an incredibly terrifying gamble.
Not a bet I'd want to make. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep asking the hard questions, and we will see you next time.